friend, and welcome to the Ayurveda and Psychology podcast. I am Charlotte Skogsberg, your host for this podcast. I am enchanted to meet and to take you with me on this journey into the human psyche, viewed from the holistic approach of yoga and Ayurveda, and viewed from the modern man approach of clinical psychology and psychoanalysis. So have something nice to drink next to you, maybe a cup of tea, have a seat, or go out for a nice walk in nature, maybe. Enjoy. In this episode that focuses on Ayurveda, I want to speak to you about resilience once again. From the Ayurvedic perspective, if we take the definition of the concept resilience as an ability to come back, to bounce back, or to adapt fast, skillfully to new conditions, really, we can compare it to Ayurveda's idea of finding balance in the doshas. There is a before and an after. Just like with a traumatic event, it leaves a trace in us. And just like the process of resilience in psychology, we need a certain number of factors to coexist in order for the process of balance to emerge as well in us. So if you were listening to the episode from last week before, you might remember that in order for resilience actually to emerge after a traumatic event, a child, which is usually what we speak about, needs to have experienced secure attachment and also have a capacity to mentalize, to create mental structures as a way to understand. Now, we need to feel balanced, therefore, before something happens, an imbalance, and we need to understand really what our needs are. We need to understand and know ourselves. This way, when imbalance happens, we are capable of defining its context and consequences more easily in the after as well, so that the process of balance can take shape. So if we would begin here with looking at what can go wrong in the before, it starts with something very common, and that is us ignoring what our needs actually are. But maybe more than that, it's our condition to actually not prioritize those needs and instead favor the expectations, or let's say our beliefs that there are expectations, from others. Or as the Vedic philosophy predicted our tendency for this, that the root cause of suffering is ignorance. So by developing self-knowledge, we learn to not suffer. We learn to recognize the imbalance, the pain, if you will, for what it is, and therefore not resist it, which actually is what creates the suffering in the first place. What do I mean by to not resist it? Well, of course, what I mean is to not pretend that it's not there. And so what would make us ignore
what is truly here, what reality is showing us? Well, the mind, of course. We are so quick to trust the thoughts in our head that we just take them for the truth, even when the mind has become broken from, well, a broken world. When our brain is convinced that it's keeping us safe from danger, air quote, out there, or from famine, for instance, starvation, it will do whatever it needs to in order to counter that. And so we experience that the world is a threat, and therefore, of course, we accumulate the stress hormones to protect us. If we look at the most common diseases of this modern world we live in, they are often linked to a heightened state of the stress hormones. Actually, many of their causes have been defined as unknown. Such is the case, of course, with autoimmune diseases, with different kinds of depleted states, such as burnout or depression. And they're often put in this unknown cause box. And the reason for that is usually found in the holistic approaches, because they include something that the modern medicine does not, which is energy. Do realize that when we have something where we put the unknown cause as the beginning, it is really impossible to have a cure. If we don't have a root cause for a disease, we can't find a cure. And then it becomes this chronic thing instead. So we call these states chronic because we say that we just have to live with them. And actually, in some cases, they will go as far as recognizing that they are lifestyle diseases. So there is something that the holistic approaches, such as Ayurveda and others, include. And that is, of course, then energy. Energy, we can call this life force, vital energy. We call this prana. It is called chi or ki. And it is what we name in Ayurvedic terms as the, in its manifested form, let's say, if we can even say that, but as vata, one of the three doshas. And this means, therefore, that from the Ayurvedic perspective, what builds up a human being is the combination of the elements. And the combination of the elements manifested in the biodynamic forms that we call the doshas, vata, pitta, and kapha. And so if from my perspective, looking at someone with the Ayurvedic glasses, goggles on, and I wouldn't find the cause of an imbalance of a disease in pitta or kapha, then I can find it in vata. But if there is no such denomination as vata, or the subtle energy of vata, which is therefore prana or life force, then there is no root cause to place. There's no box for it, which is what is exactly the case in modern medicine. But Ayurveda actually tells us that this vata is the root cause of all diseases, really, because it's the leading dosha of the three. And it's also, of course, the most unpredictable. Why is it unpredictable? Unpredictable because Vata in itself, this biodynamic form, is the combination of the elements air and space. It has therefore the characteristics of air. Air or wind. Wind being, by definition, unpredictable because irregular, going in one direction and then the other. And why is then Vata the leading dosha? Why would that be the case? Well, really, because nothing can be organic, be alive without prana. And the other two doshas cannot move out of balance without it, such as fire cannot spread without air, and water cannot change without movement, let's say. So the subtle energy of the Vata dosha is prana, or life force. The same way that the subtle energy of Pitta dosha is tejas, or we can say strength, and the subtle energy of the Kapha dosha is ojas, or we can even call it vitality. When there is no life force, well, there can be no strength or vitality. So if I would narrow this down, what I've just said, to, let's say, one phrase about resilience in Ayurveda, it would be that for resilience to be, Ayurveda focuses on prana or energy. Quick throwback to when I was speaking about resilience from the psychology perspective, we are the sum of all our past experiences, which means that our life force, our energy, as we grow, as we move forward, moves in our bodies, and where it encounters blockages, it finds its way around it. Just like a tree that grows along the side of a mountain and that has one side in obscurity due to the mountain, and then the other side where the sun is, will therefore tend to grow in a way that it follows the line of the mountain and reaches towards the sun, which is something we sometimes see with these trees that aren't actually growing straight up. And so they've been following basically where life is available to them. And so our life force travels in our body, and when there's blockages, tightness, it will find its way around it. And that is how we then start to develop different kinds of, well, first of all, physical shapes in our body, that our hips might be very tight, for instance, and that we find ways to compensate for the tightness in the hips. But also injuries. So where there is no life force, where we're all numb, where the muscles aren't activated easily, we will not be strong and we will compensate with other parts of the body. And these blockages that we have in the body, they are there because of events that we've gone through that were not explicable to us, incomprehensible to us. And this is what we call a traumatic event. And so they get stuck in the body, they become something. This is, of course, the reason that when we begin a yogic practice, for say, and little by little the body begins to open up, we are experiencing emotional states because we're actually going into those corners where there's been a blockage, where there's been things pushed away, where we don't want to feel. So naturally, if we want to create a strong resilience inside of us from the Ayurvedic perspective, what we want to do is to make sure that that life force can flow as freely as possible. So to undo the knots, to release the blockages. And the better we become at doing that, so the stronger that life force is flowing, the more resilient we become. Basically, we bounce back no matter the weather conditions or the different kinds of viruses or whatnot that enters our system. So, if we want to enhance our process of resilience in times of imbalance, we would therefore want to focus on finding balance in our subtle energy, in our prana. We believe, for the most of us, that we increase our prana through sleep and food. And this is, of course, correct. But it's not the totality of this truth. Because we can sleep for 10 hours. We can eat the most nutritious food in the world. If we are not absorbing the nutritious factors in these two energy sources, we will not increase our prana. The only way that we can increase our body's capacity to resource itself is to make sure that it doesn't stay in fight or flight mode. Or, to be more exact, that it truly is in rest and digest mode. Even the denomination, what we've come to call the parasympathetic nervous system, says it, right? It's the rest and digest mode. It means that if we cannot actually relax, it doesn't matter what we do, because nothing increases our life force. And here lies the biggest part of the issue. Let's be clear on what relaxation actually is. It is not to watch Netflix. It is not to drink alcohol, to indulge in your favorite food, or to scroll on social media. All of the above are distractions from what stresses the system, which is why we believe that it's relaxation. But actually, it puts us in an idle position instead. And we might believe that we are relaxing because we are switching our focus from what truly creates the stress in our life. But nothing is actually relaxed. Our brains and our default mode network are very much in action during these distraction times. We relax when we fully shut this down and when our muscles are relaxed. Just think right now of shoulders, neck, and jaw, and how often they're tight. And they're tight even though you don't realize it, because you are just so habituated to it. In Ayurveda, relaxation happens with proper nidra, with proper sleep. Staying awake at night increases vata. It aggravates vata. Now, it's important to know here that Ayurveda doesn't actually speak about how many hours you should sleep. It speaks about when you should be sleeping. And the way we can learn to relax our system is to align, therefore, with our circadian rhythm. When we are awake at night, our cortisol, the stress hormone, is running amok in the system very much. And that is because, well, our ancestors, if they would be awake in the middle of the night, it was due to the need to be alert. Which obviously makes sense when you think about the only reason our ancestors would need to be awake when it's completely pitch dark is, for instance, to guard the fire, or, you know, make sure that the herd of other people are safe. Which is also what we can notice sometimes when we wake up in the middle of the night and we're feeling extremely alert and we find it very hard to fall back asleep. It's because it's the time as well when naturally our cortisol levels, so the stress hormone levels, begin to rise in our system. If we have normal levels of cortisol, this wouldn't wake us up. And the reason it does wake us up and that we can't go back to sleep is because they're not normal, but they're too high. So to kind of tie the knot on this idea of resilience from the Ayurvedic perspective, in order to take care of our capacity to bounce back, we focus on our energy levels or our vital force. And to increase our vital force when it's weak, to strengthen it, there is only really one thing, and that is relaxation. And relaxation only really can take place when we can shut down the activity of the brain and allow for our muscles to actually relax, which is not something that they do when we are simply distracting ourselves. So the first thing to focus on is to get the proper sleep. And the proper sleep we get at the proper times of the night, not by sleeping 10, 12, 15 hours. Now there's other ways as well that we can enhance that capacity of relaxation. And this is where we come back to Vata again, to that dosha, to that biomechanic form that needs to be balanced out when we are experiencing traumatic imbalances that takes us away from our strength and our balance, and where we need to enhance this process of resilience. And so another word for Vata, we could say, or a modern perspective look on things, would be to talk about the nervous system. And so a way to enhance our capacity of resilience is to focus on balancing and nurturing our nervous system. And if we begin to look into all the different principles and practices that Ayurveda gives us, we can actually see that each and one of them, every single one, is all about strengthening, balancing our nervous system. Firstly, sleeping at the right time, aligning with the circadian rhythm. Secondly, enhancing relaxing mode by using specific parts of our body, sometimes referred to as marma points, for instance, but also simply by doing certain practices such as Abhyanga self-massage, massaging the back and the front of the root of the ear and the earlobe, because it will stimulate the vagus nerve. Also, practicing calming movement that we call asanas, or the yoga postures, meditation, and learning to control our breath and therefore control the nervous response by choosing different kind of breath techniques known as pranayama. All these practices, really the goal is to create resilience, our capacity to adapt quickly, to bounce back skillfully.
Thank you so much for choosing to listen to this podcast and this episode. I am very grateful. If you enjoyed this and you think that other people could enjoy this, please help me to spread the word. share this episode on any channel that you have of social media or messaging. And even more so, I would really appreciate if you know one other person who might benefit from my words today specifically. Take that 1 minute it takes to simply share this episode with one person. Remember that there's a human being on the other side of your phone, of your earpods, of this microphone. And I would love to hear your thoughts on what I've been talking about. So please leave a comment. Send me a message directly if you wish. This is Charlotte. This is me. See you next time. Namaste.